We have one of those problems that you like to have. This morning I put 100 baskets on the stage with a list of 85 people at this point to whom we want to take them. And after the services were over, I had several come to me and say, I did not get a basket to fix or to prepare. And that's the kind of problem that you like to have. Here's what I would suggest. If you did not get a basket and you would like to have one, write your name on a card, say, need a basket, and hand it to me. If you got more than two baskets, or even two baskets, and you would be willing to let somebody else prepare one of those, let me know about that. I'll spend the next two or three days getting baskets from one place to another. That's the kind of problem that you like to have. This morning when the first one asked me that, I said, well, just prepare a basket and bring it to me. But if you do that, I'd like to tell you what to put in it. For the last several days, we've had another problem, continue to have a problem. We don't know who the President of the United States for the next term is going to be, at least yet, we do not know. And I guess that there has been no word that has been used in the last several days any more than the word vote, V-O-T-E. Several of you have expressed to me in the last two or three weeks that you're surprised that we've not already had a lesson dealing with the subject. I'm not for sure that I know exactly where to tune in. I think perhaps later on we may have a lesson on the subject. There will be no recount at judgment. But tonight, I want to think with you for a few minutes about the subject that you cast the deciding vote. I've never heard in all my life as many times as I have in the last 3 weeks or so the statement made that every vote counts. And I think if nothing else comes out of this time, that we have seen that. Perhaps that'll be one of the great lessons in history that our younger generation will learn. There was an interesting report the other night. I don't remember exactly when or how it fits into the overall picture, but at a time at least when there had been the opportunity granted for some recounts, somebody was figuring, and I don't even remember which side it was figuring. Maybe it was a newsman. Somebody was figuring that if this county did this and this county did this and this other one did something else, that the way they had it figured, that when they totaled up the vote, one of the candidates would win Florida by one vote. I doubt that that happens. But I believe we are convinced that each one of us might be able in many instances to cast the deciding vote. The sermon tonight was not prompted by the election. It was prompted by reading an article in a bulletin recently where a young man said, I was standing in front of my mantle and looked up and saw the pictures of both my grandfathers above the mantle. I stood there and thought for a moment as I looked at one of them, about how he was a Christian. He was always happy. He spent his life trying to serve other people. And he said, I looked over at the other one and I had to think he was not a Christian. He lived a life in which his attitude was almost ornery and selfish. And the thought went through my mind, I've got the genes of both those fellows in my body. And then he said, but I realized that I get to cast the deciding vote. I realized that I get to make the final decision. As I read that, I thought of both my grandfathers. They were both Christians, and I'm thankful for both of them. But I had one grandfather who was always jovial and always happy and always telling something to make you laugh and always thinking about people. I had another grandfather who seldom smiled who was usually thinking about things instead of people. And I just got to thinking after reading that article, I've got the genes of both those fellows in my body. But I get to cast the deciding vote. I'm the one who gets to cast the deciding vote as to what type of person I am. Think for a moment about the passage that Robert read just a moment ago. Hold fast to that which is good. Abstain from the very appearance of evil. And keep that word good and that word evil in mind as we go to Romans 12:9. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. And keep them in mind as we go to 1 John 2:15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And you begin to come to the conclusion that the entire human race from the beginning of the Garden of Eden itself has been dealing with pulls from the right and pulls from the left, pulls from the good and tugs from the evil. And that is exactly what you and I face tonight. Wonder with me in your thinking back for a few minutes in the Bible. Let's go back as far as Genesis 3 to the Garden of Eden. God said, I want you to listen to me. And a part of that is, I don't want you to eat of this tree of the knowledge of good and evil. When you eat of it, you'll die. The devil came along and said, I want you to listen to me. And I'm here to tell you that you won't die. But if you eat of this fruit, it's going to make you wise, and you're going to really be benefited by it. And so Eve faced the tug from God saying, do what is right and don't eat of it. And the devil saying, do what will make you wise and what you want to do and eat of it. God saying, if you do, you'll die. The devil saying, if you do eat of it, you'll die. And the devil saying, if you eat of it, you won't die. And then, of course, a little later, Eve gave to Adam. And Adam had on the one hand the interest from God who had said, don't eat of it. I want you to follow me. I want you to do what is right. And he had an additional pull on the left hand. He had the devil and Eve. Devil working through Eve, at least. Saying, come on and do it. God saying, don't do it. Eve saying, come on and do it. And you know in that case that Eve voted to eat the fruit. And Adam voted to eat the fruit. And folks, I'll guarantee you something. In this case, neither one of them did what they did because of child abuse in their earlier lives. Neither one of them did. Adam and Eve voted to go with the devil. And the devil and Adam and Eve made a majority against God on this point in order to make the decision such that they were cast out of the Garden of Eden. God said, if you'll do what I tell you, you can live right here. The devil said, do what I tell you. And they voted to go with the devil. And they lost their home in the Garden of Eden and brought sin into this world that's been the problem ever since and remains the problem today. Come a little bit further in the Bible with me and look at the New Testament at the temptation of Christ. Same devil. In fact, the same ways of temptation attacking Jesus in the same way that he had attacked Eve and Adam in the Garden of Eden. In the wilderness, he said to Jesus, those three things, you remember them, turn the stones to bread, cast yourself off the pinnacle of the temple, do what I tell you to do, and you can have all these lands that you see. Jesus had the vote of his Father, the vote of confidence that his Father had in his Son. He had the desire of his Father that he do what is right and resist the temptations. He had, on the other hand, the vote of the devil, Who said you need the bread? You want the land? And you can have the fame of angels keeping you from hitting the stones. Here's the scene. One vote from God, one vote from the devil. Jesus cast the deciding vote. He could have yielded to the temptation of the devil. If he could not, he would not be the Savior that we believe he is tonight. But he didn't. He could vote with God, and he did. Jesus cast the deciding vote. Go back with me again to the Old Testament, this time to the book of Job. Same devil, same God. God's proud of his servant Job. Even says to the devil, have you considered how faithful he is to me? The devil says, you just let me do what I want to do and I'll get him to deny you. God let him go eventually to where he could take everything but his life. You read the first chapter of Job and you see Job losing all of his oxen and all of his camels and all of his sheep and all of his 10 children in death. The devil said, Job, here's what's going to happen to you. And you see the evidence of it. All these things are taken away from you because you're serving God. And yet Job knew in his mind who God was, what God had promised. He knew that God had cast his vote for faithfulness, and he knew that the devil was casting his vote for Job to turn his back on God and deny him. In the latter part of the first chapter of Job, we see his first vote. He said, naked came I into this world, and naked I'll leave it. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job voted for the Lord. A little later on, he had a conflict between God and Job's wife. God, he knew, was still encouraging him to do what was right. Job's wife said, curse God and die. Job cast his vote. He voted with God. And he remained faithful. But folks, the one who cast the deciding vote on that occasion was Job. God was already standing there. His vote was already cast. The devil's vote was already cast. Job had the deciding vote, and he cast it to go with God. Judas had the pull from one hand of his association with Christ as an apostle, and on the other hand, the love of money and material things. Jesus had said to his apostles, in a sense, if you study through the Gospels, the accounts of the Gospels at least, you stay with me, we'll come out on top. The people said, Judas, here's 30 pieces of silver. We vote that you take the silver and betray him. Jesus voted for him to remain faithful. Judas cast the deciding vote. He listened to the appeal of the money and the appeal of the people who wanted to put Jesus to death. And he voted against Jesus and voted with them. And you know the rest of the story. Consider the rich young ruler in Matthew 19. You know the conversation of where Jesus told him what he needed to do, and he said, I've lived a moral life. I've kept all these commandments. Jesus said, all right, here's what I want you to do. Here's my vote in the situation. I want you to sell what you have and use what you have to help others. Materialism voted on the other side and said to this young ruler, look what you have that you're going to have to give up if you follow Jesus. Here was the tug of war, voting on this side to follow Jesus and serve him, voting on this side to have the material things of this life. Who cast the deciding vote? The young ruler went away sorrowful because he was very rich. He had the opportunity to vote on the other side. He had the opportunity to cast his vote in the other way, but he didn't. He went in the other direction. Let your mind wander back again to the book of Genesis, this time to chapter 39. Young man by the name of Joseph. He's away from home. He has had a very bad childhood in many ways. Probably could have said that whatever he did was because of the way he'd been treated by his brethren. He had an opportunity, evidently, again and again and again to be sexually involved with his master's wife. The indication is that she continued to try to seduce him and to encourage him to become her lover. And the record of Genesis 39 says that Joseph said, "I can't do it. If I do, I'll sin against God, I'll sin against you, I'll sin against my master, and I'll sin against myself." He had been taught enough somewhere in those early 16 or 17 years to understand what morality meant. And God's vote was on his side, saying, "Here's what the truth is. Here's what the real matter is." And here's Potiphar's wife on this side saying, "Look, come on, look at the pleasures we can have. Look at the position I have and the position you have. And here I am, the Potiphar's wife, and I want you to come and lie with me." Joseph had the opportunity to cast the deciding vote. God said, "Don't." The devil, through this woman, said, "Do." And Joseph says, "I can't." He cast the deciding vote. Time and time again, during this last week, you and I have cast the deciding vote. And if this earth continues time and time again in the week that is to come, you and I will decide the outcome of several elections. Because we have faced and we will face God on one side saying this and the devil on the other side saying this, God representing the good, the devil representing the evil. Remember good and evil in two or three of those passages that we noticed earlier. You cast the deciding vote this morning. God wanted you to get up on time, prepare yourself, and be in Bible class and worship. The devil said, "Sleep in. You can go on Sunday night and at least take the Lord's Supper. And by the way, you've only been going once a week anyway." Or maybe if the devil thought you were not ready to go all his way, he said, "Well, at least sleep in an extra hour. And don't go to Bible class, just get there in time for the morning worship." God said, "I want you there." Devil said, "Don't go." You cast the deciding vote. And you know what that vote was. Last night on a date, your date said, "Let's go all the way and be sexually involved." You, knowing that you were not married, knowing the teaching of God, cast a vote. God said, "Don't do it. I vote for you to respect my word and save yourself for the marriage relationship." The devil said, "Go ahead. Listen to your feelings. Listen to your emotions." Some of you cast the vote with God. And some people last night cast their vote with the devil. But you cast the deciding vote. And if you are not married to someone with whom you have engaged in sexual relations, unless it was rape, you cast the deciding vote. You are the one who decided. A test is in progress. You look over to the side, and that student's paper is wide open, and he has the right answers, and you know that he usually makes an A. God says, "Don't look." The devil says, "You've got an opportunity." You cast the deciding vote. On April the 15th, you're filling out your income tax, and you know that there's some income that you've had that's not been reported. It was given in cash, and nobody knows about it but you and God and the devil. And so the three of you are going to make a decision. God says you be honest, even with your government. The devil says it's not the government it ought to be, so get everything you can. You cast the deciding vote. Folks, when you are approached with the opportunity to be involved with alcohol, with drugs, and anybody who doesn't know what's happening in those areas is probably not accountable to God anyway. And someone comes along and says, oh, come on, it's the popular thing to do. Everybody's doing it. Try it. You've never felt like this before. God says, don't. The devil says, do. But who casts the deciding vote? There's an opportunity to serve someone on the other side of the matter. You have an opportunity to give or to help, to use your time, to reach out to serve somebody. God says, do. Devil says, don't. Who's going to cast the deciding vote? Perhaps our biggest problem in the United States of America and in the world is not the election. It is the problem of irresponsibility. Trying to blame somebody else for our mistakes. And not being big enough to look at ourselves and realize that God has made me and you in such a way that we have the ability, the opportunity, and the responsibility to cast the deciding vote. There is a simple verse in Romans 14:12. Every one of us shall give an account unto God. That comes as near saying the title to our lesson tonight is any verse that I know. You are the one who will cast the deciding vote. You sit there tonight and you're not a Christian. We appeal to you to turn to this word and understand the need to confess your belief, to repent, to be buried with your Lord in baptism for the remission of sins. And God says, that's what I want you to do. And Jesus even says, come unto me. The devil says, oh, wait a minute. Wait a little longer. I vote that you don't do it tonight. Jesus says, I vote that you do. The devil says, I vote that you don't. You will cast the deciding vote. You're sitting there tonight and you've lived in a way that you shouldn't have lived, known to others. You need to come and ask for public prayer and forgiveness. Jesus says, come on, my blood will take care of you. I'll forgive you. If you'll just have a penitent heart, I'll forgive you. The devil says, oh, wait a minute. You don't need to do that. It's not really that important. Or if you do, everybody's going to know you made a mistake. Jesus says, come on. The devil says, hold on to that seat and don't give up. And you will cast the deciding vote. Good, evil, God, the devil, come, stay. How do you vote? As together we stand and sing. Through the glory.